We're back. This is Tiffany Hales
and Ariane Smith,
and we are the Sisters in Zion. You may recall a few weeks ago, we recorded our first podcast as a guest podcast for This Week in Mormons. And so we kind of consider that to be our pilot episode. And we got a lot of positive feedback from that episode. And so this is kind of like our first season now, because Al and Jeff allowed us to do this again.
They let us come back to play, and we're so glad.
We had a lot of fun recording that last podcast, and we're very thankful for all the positive feedback. Because that was great.
Yeah, so lots of fun.
Lots of fun.
Okay.
So to start out with, for us, it is June.
Yay!
We're so relieved. It's June.
We have to talk about the month of May.
Yes.
I don't think Jeff and Al realize this yet, because their kids aren't well.
Al has no kids.
Yes. Jeff's kid is too young to realize.
Too young. Yes.
You have been telling me this for years, that the month of May is like insanity as a mother. And it finally hit me this year. My kids are old enough to where I was like, oh, I understand now.
Yes, for any of you out there who have children, and especially, I think it starts about three when they kind of get into preschool. But then when you get multiple children and you multiply it by different grades and different ages, it just gets worse. The month of May is awful. It is an endless parade of projects that are due.
Field trips. I had two field trips in 1 week. I had two carnivals in 1 week for two different kids. Field days.
I had finals that I was encouraging my children to study for. My fourth grader had this bazaar where they make things and then they sell them for school money at the bazaar so that they have money for the said carnival that Ariane just talked about. And then you have the endless performances recitals.
Yes. Piano recitals, dance recitals.
Never ends.
It was crazy this year.
And I know.
We went out with a bang. You know this story. I'll tell everybody else. Oh my goodness. Second to last week of school, my middle child threw up on the bus on her way home. My girls are famous for throwing up. They never get ear infections. They never get strep throat, but they always throw up. Always. They have the weakest stomachs.
It's that gag reflex. Anything hits that gag reflex, boom, it's coming back up.
So she throws up on the bus all over herself, all over her.
Now, is this on the ride to school or the ride home from school?
This is on the ride home. All over herself, all over her best friend's backpack.
Oh, dear.
And new shoes.
Oh, dear.
I felt horrible. As a mom, if your kid comes home with someone else's vomit on their backpack, that's going in the trash.
It's bad enough to have to deal with your own child's vomit, and then to have to deal with the regurgitation of another child.
I know.
That's just awful. So tell us, how did you learn that she threw up on the bus and threw up on this other child?
Oh, well, I always wait in the car for her at the bus stop, and the bus stopped, and it was taking like a really long time for him to let the kids off, and I see the driver up and he's got paper towels, and I'm like, And then she gets off the bus and she has a wad of paper towels in her hand.
Oh, no.
And she's walking to the car and this look on her face, and I knew it in a second. I was like, oh no, I know what happened. And sure enough, she gets in. So I feel horrible. I think a couple days later, I sent a Target gift card with her to school to give to her friend's mom.
We assume she had to throw the backpack away.
I know she threw it away. I asked my daughter the next day, did she bring her backpack? And she said, no, she threw it away.
Of course.
I knew she went. I would have thrown it away.
That's just one of those things. It's not salvageable.
So the mom was super nice. She sent it back with a note and said, no, it's fine. It was an accident. It's no problem. I can't accept this. And she was really nice.
But then
we got a nice gift for the bus driver at the end of the year. Because I really think he got probably the worst end of that deal.
Plus he had to drive back to the bus barn with his bus smelling like puke.
I know. It's bad enough to have to be a bus driver.
I know, but you got to share the other end of the year story.
Was it the second to the last day with this same child? Second to last day, same child. I'm telling you, my middle child, she is the one that keeps me on my toes. I cannot I just she's so unpredictable. So I get an email the second to last day of school from her teacher. Never a good sign.
No, no, no. If you are getting an unsolicited email from the teacher that you can tell that has not gone out in mass production to all the parents.
It's never good.
That is never good, so, ever. In any realm, is that a good email?
Yes. So second to last day of school, I got an email from her teacher to me and another mom. Saying, just wanted to let you know about an incident that happened at school today. The girls were taking a bathroom break, and my daughter, my middle child, dared this other little girl to drink water from the toilet. And the other little girl took the dare.
Do we know? Did she just dip her hand in?
I have no idea. There was no further explanation, just that the girls had been talked to, and the teacher's aide explained what a hazard this was and how they should not be doing dares. And could we reinforce this at home? I was like, oh my goodness, it is a good thing there's only one day left of school because this child's done.
So how did you reinforce this at home?
Well, I went and talked to her about it. And, of course, her natural instinct is to blame her older sister. Because I said, where did you get this idea? And her first, always, Callie did it. I heard Callie do a dare once.
Oh, my gosh. So,
but we are pretty sure, because I've never heard her older sister dare her to do things. I am pretty sure she got from the Christmas Story. The beloved Christmas movie that we watch every year where they triple dog dare the kid to stick his tongue on the pole. I am pretty sure that's where she got this idea.
The idea for the dare, not so much the idea for drinking the toilet water.
The idea for the dare. I have no idea where the toilet water thing came from.
Oh my gosh.
But, you know, maybe there's a tie to the throw up the week before. Is this something that she's doing? I didn't know.
Oh, dear.
I don't know, but that middle kid.
Well, and mind you, she just finished first grade. We have 11 more years of school.
She's little.
Honey, I feel sorry for you.
She's already made an impact in her young.
I'm not sure it's gonna get better. Yeah. So, we ended the month of May in not so quite as an exciting fashion, but I just kind of want to share this story because Mama Bear came roaring out. Mama Bear Tiffany was not happy. So, very last day of the month, I have survived two children with birthdays in May. I've survived carnivals, bazaars, projects, finals. I mean, the last week of school, I'm just like, homework, schmomework, I don't care. You know, I was done by then. So, last Wednesday in May, my girls, I have two teenage girls, as I've talked about. I've got a 17-year-old and a 16-year-old. And so, our stake is doing stake girls camp this year. And this is the first time they've done stake girls camp for a long time in my stake. They've always done ward girls camp. And when I first arrived in this stake, I started asking questions. I was kind of a little rebel rouser of, why are we doing ward girls camp and repeating the same thing 9 times? Wouldn't it be a more efficient use of our resources to do stake girls camp? So a few banging of the pots around here and there, and finally I think I got somebody who listened to me because they're now doing stake girls camp. So
that's fun.
I know. So girls camp is in about 3 weeks. So they had last week they were having a meeting at the church, and they were having all of the girls come to the church, and because they just kind of wanted to go over you know, what was going to be expected at stake girls camp. So this was a stake mutual, not per se a ward mutual.
Right.
And so, you know, my girls leave the house and they are dressed as they are always dressed for mutual when it's a casual activity. They had on shorts, you know, and I didn't think anything of it. These are shorts I've seen them wear all the time. In our house, the way that we teach modesty is we are all about the Joseph Smith philosophy of teach them correct principles, let them govern themselves.
Right.
We have never had, you know, your hem has to go to here, your shorts have to go to there, you know, your tank top has to be 2 fingers wide or no tank tops. That's just not what my husband and I do.
Mm-hmm.
And so the shorts that both my girls had on, they were certainly did not go to the knees. They were a little higher than mid-thigh, but not, you know, they were appropriate for the girls. The girls could bend over. No underwear was coming out. No butt cheeks were hanging out. They were long enough.
No, I've never seen your girls dressed inappropriately.
Exactly. So they get there and they walk into the gym. And Shelby, she's the 17-year-old. She's the first one that walks into the gym. And this leader walks up to her. And this is not a stake leader. It's not somebody she knows. We presume it's probably maybe a camp director from another ward. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. And so she walks up to Shelby, and the first thing she says to Shelby is, she kind of looks her up and down, and she says, "Are you bringing those shorts to girls' camp?" And it kind of caught Shelby off guard, and Shelby was like, "Well, yeah, I guess. I don't know, you know. I mean, it's 3.5 weeks before girls' camp. They don't even know what they're doing tomorrow, let alone what they're packing for girls' camp." And so then after Shelby says, yeah, that she's probably going to bring these shorts to girls' camp, this leader just goes off on her, just starts telling her shorts are inappropriate, she shouldn't even be wearing them in the church, that she needs to go read Strength for the Youth, for the Strength of Youth, and you can imagine that my 17-year-old, she's kind of stubborn. As soon as she said that, boom, Shelby, she was out. Right. I mean, she stayed for the meeting, but she sat down, and Lauren, the 16-year-old, went over to sit next to her, and Lauren was like, "Whoa, you're mad. I'm going somewhere else." So, needless to say, Shelby did not hear a thing that went on in the meeting.
Right.
And she came home, and she was upset, and rightfully so. And then she made the mistake of telling her mother. And then her mother got even more upset. Because that's a big deal for me. I have always taught my girls, along with the principle of, you know, look, you want to dress in a way that is appropriate for the activity, in a way that shows respect for yourself, in a way that shows respect for Heavenly Father, and you need to never judge how somebody else dresses.
Right.
That's not your position. And so it's probably a good thing she did not know who this leader was, because I would have called her up and I would have cut her like bad bangs, because you just don't modesty shame a kid.
I know, especially a teenager.
Well, and especially when you don't have any stewardship over.
Right.
You know, it's not like this was the bishop saying anything to her. It's not like it was her own young women's leader saying anything to her.
Right.
You know, if they had said something to her, she probably would have taken it very lovingly, mm-hmm. because, you know, Shelby's a very loving girl. But to just have some random person who doesn't know Shelby just start, you know, commenting on the length of her shorts, just not a good thing. So it was kind of the final capstone to the end of May, which was a crazy month.
That is crazy. I know. Well, and I always think, what if Shelby was not a member? What if she was a friend that had come with someone? Or I don't know. When you told me this, I just laughed, because when we lived in Portland, I don't think this would have happened, because they were just desperate to get the girls to go to camp.
They didn't care what they wore. They just wanted them to show up.
Yes. Please, please just come. Because, you know, they're teenagers.
Exactly.
I mean, not that we shouldn't have any guidelines. Yeah. Guidelines are fine.
Yeah.
But, you know. Anyway.
Exactly.
The great girls' camp short debate lives on. This debate has been going on for years. Since we were in girls' camp, right?
Exactly. Since we were in girls' camp.
Do you wear shorts? Do you not wear shorts?
And there is wards and stakes that span that spectrum, say the least.
Oh, yes.
So
you know what I would love? I would love it if, like, the little tiny jogging shorts came back in style for the boys. And I would love to see if there was some kind of short regulation for scout camp. That would be unheard of, right?
That would be so unheard of. You're talking like the 1970s
little running shorts.
Oh my gosh, that would be hilarious.
Came back in style for boys.
Yes.
Would they be like, they would have this great dilemma. Like,
they would, and would they treat the dilemma with the boys and the shorty shorts for the boys in the same manner that they treat the dilemma of the shorty shorts for the girls?
Yes. Let's cross our fingers that this happens.
Let's cross. I would. I'd like to see how this goes.
I think it would be a very interesting social experiment.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, you know, after we finished out the month of May, we had this last weekend, which was, of course, the beginning of June. And I have to say, this last weekend was was definitely a reward for the insufferable things that occurred in May.
Your family had a very exciting weekend.
We did.
You had a graduation?
We did. We had a graduation. Mm-hmm. So my son Isaac graduated from high school, and that happened on Saturday. But it was not just his high school graduation. We had a whole slew of things going on this weekend. So on Saturday morning, we had the opportunity to go through the temple with a gentleman by the name of Johnny. And let me explain to you who Johnny is. So Johnny is my son Isaac's best friend. And these two have literally been joined at the hip for about 3 years now. There is nobody in the ward that doesn't refer to them as a match set. Johnny and Isaac.
That's true.
And my nickname for them, this is going to sound awful, I call them Beavis and Butthead. They are not crude in the way that Beavis and Butthead are crude, but they're silly and stupid in the way that Beavis and Butthead are silly and stupid.
I can see that.
And they look like Beavis and Butthead. One of them is really tall with dark hair, and then one of them is shorter with the blonde hair.
You're right. They kind of do.
They do. They look like Beavis and Butthead. Anyway, and so Johnny graduated a year ago, and it's been really interesting to watch Johnny during this last year as he has kind of struggled with the decision of, you know, does he want to serve a mission, and deciding for himself that he wanted to serve a mission. And he did make that decision, and he got his mission call, and he's going in on the 28th of June. And so he went through the temple on Saturday. And of course, my husband and I were invited. Literally in the last 3 years, I think Johnny's eaten more meals at my house than his parents' house. He has been an integral part of our family. And it was so special when we were sitting in the temple to see him take out his endowments. The officiator in the session was a former bishop in our ward who had known Johnny since he was just a little boy. And to watch him just really lovingly help Johnny, it was great.
That's cool.
It was really cool.
Very nice.
So after we left that, we then had graduation in the afternoon for my son Isaac, and 3 o'clock in the afternoon graduation. So we all gathered at what is lovingly known in Idaho as the Taco Bell Arena, and for his graduation. But they were really good. They whipped through those names pretty quickly. So after that, we then headed to my house for a post graduation party, which Ariane came over. So
oh yeah,
I'll let you explain the post graduation party.
Oh, it was fun times. Hot dogs, ice cream sundaes.
Exactly.
It was good. It was fun.
It was fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it was really nice when the kids were all there. I just kind of stood back for a moment because, again, May had been so crazy just to go, oh, this is so great just to have my family here all together. Mm-hmm. But during dinner, I have to tell you what happened during dinner.
Yes, you have to tell them.
So we're sitting in the graduation ceremony, and my 13-year-old is sitting next to me, Mark, and he says, hey, Mom, my tooth is loose. So like every good mom, I poke my finger in his mouth, and I said, yeah, it's loose. And so he says to me, this is during graduation, he's like, Mom, can you pull my tooth? And I said, well, you know, we're in the middle of graduation. This might not be an appropriate activity. So he says, I said, I'll pull it when we get home. Uh-huh. And he said, will you wait till after dinner? And I said, yes, I'll wait till after dinner. So he hurry and finishes his dinner, and I'm sitting there eating, and he says, Mom, I'm ready to have my tooth pulled. And I said, well, Mark, give me a minute here. Let me finish my own dinner. So as he's sitting around the table, I don't remember who it was that dared him. It was
Johnny or Isaac, I'm sure.
I think it was Johnny or Isaac. One of the two of them dared him.
Encouraging him.
They dare him to pull his own tooth.
So maybe that's where Charlotte learned how to do dares.
That could be.
From your children.
From my children. So they dare him to pull his own tooth. So we're all sitting around my big dining room table, seats 10.
Oh, yeah.
And I say, okay, Mark, you know, are you going to, and he's thinking about it. And I tell him, I said, you got to go show Charlotte. That's Ariane's 7-year-old. If you pull your tooth, because she's a little traumatized by losing teeth and pulling teeth.
Yeah. She's scared.
She's scared. And so he sits there for a minute, and then to kind of sweeten the pot for the dare, Shelby has one of her friends over. And so Ethan says to Mark, Mark, you pull your tooth and I'll get you a 2-liter of Mountain Dew and a big bag of Doritos. That's all it took.
He knows Boom. The way to Mark's heart.
He knows the way to Mark's heart. The tooth is out. So we're sitting there with this pulled tooth and a bloody mess as we sit around and eat our graduation meal.
Oh, yeah. It's always fun.
It's always fun. But the party did not end after that. So Ariane and her kids go home.
I know. And then I find out later you continued to party without us.
We did. We had the after dark party. So, you know, here's what's really cool about my son, Isaac. He could have obviously gone to the big senior night party, but he wanted to hang out with our family on graduation night. And I think that that's really cool. Well, earlier in the day, our first counselor had been over and he'd been asking us if we had seen this movie. It's called Inspired Guns.
I have never heard of that.
I had never heard of it either. Apparently, it is an LDS genre comedy movie. It's about these two missionaries who inadvertently start teaching some mob guys, but the mob guys don't realize that they're teaching them, and the FBI gets involved, and they take out this mob and everything.
Sounds like your typical Mormon.
Exactly. So the first counselor in my bishopric, Rich, he is just going off about how this is like the best movie ever, and have we ever seen it? And we haven't. And he says, okay, I'm coming back tonight. We're gonna watch the movie. So he texts us about 10:30 and he says, are you game for the movie? And we're still all up and going. And so we say, sure. So he shows up at about 11 o'clock with his 12-year-old daughter because his wife is out of town at a family reunion.
Oh, wow.
And movie candy to boot. It takes him, my projection system is so old that, and he doesn't have it on DVD, that it takes him about an hour to get it set up. And so at 2 o'clock in the morning, or excuse me, at midnight, we start Inspired Guns.
Oh dear, it's a good thing I did not stay for the after party.
You did not stay.
I wouldn't have made it.
It was very slapstick. I still like Singles Ward the best.
Okay.
The boys loved it. It's more male.
So should I watch it?
Your husband would probably like it.
Okay.
You would, there are funny parts of it, but it wasn't bad. So.
Okay.
So then that brings us to Sunday morning.
You were up bright and early. We both on Sunday morning got the opportunity, since we live in the great state of Idaho, to watch the broadcast of the Idaho Falls Temple dedication. And you went to the early one after being up that late.
I did. I went to the 9 o'clock one, but I got a good nap in that afternoon.
That is good. So yeah, it was really cool. We have some ties to that temple. Neither of us have ever been to that temple. I wanted to make it over to the open house, but never did. We never could fit it in.
Well, it was the month of May.
Yeah, it was the month of May. That's why. So yeah, our parents were actually married and sealed there back in the 60s.
Yes, 1965.
But we've never been there.
No.
We need to go. We just don't make it to that side of the state, like hardly ever.
I think I might have been there once for a youth baptism, maybe.
Oh, okay.
I think so, because the Boise Temple wasn't built yet.
Oh,
and so the only temple in Idaho was Idaho Falls.
I
vaguely remember maybe going there, but I don't remember anything about it at all whatsoever.
Yeah. Anyway, so it was kind of cool to be there for the open, or the dedication. President Eyring spoke, and I thought he did a great job, and he had some personal stories and connections to Idaho Falls and Rexburg area, so that was kind of cool. And we have to talk about that. I know Jeff and Al already talked about the decor,
but we're gonna hit on the decor too. We cannot let this go.
We really, really like the inside of that temple.
Oh, we're obsessed with the inside of that temple.
So retro cool.
It is so retro cool.
And what we love the most, we keep talking about this,
yes,
cannot get over it, the green in the celestial room.
Yes.
It's pretty bright.
It's pretty bright.
For a celestial room. I can't think of other temples that
have
that bright of a color in the celestial room.
You know, we are used to the Boise Temple, which has very kind of whites and creams, mm-hmm, and very muted kind of pastel colors in its celestial room. So when I first saw the pictures of the Idaho Falls Temple, and they have this beautiful mural in the celestial room, but then this bright furniture... I was blown away.
I know.
I was like, isn't this supposed to be white?
I love
it. It's not white.
I love it. I think there will be lots of colors.
I love it too. And mm-hmm, I have to say, when I noticed the color there, the color, in my opinion, and again, I'm looking at the photographs, I believe it is the color greenery. Now, for those of you who are familiar with color, there is a company called Pantone, and they come out every year with the color of the year. And they usually release that color of the year in December. And in December, they release the color of the year, and it was greenery. It's a green that kind of has a little more yellow flavor to it. So yeah. It's a little bit brighter green.
It's a cool green.
But I swear to you that the Idaho Falls Temple is spot on with
that
the color of the year.
Is the color of the year. So the question is, obviously they ordered their furniture and design before Pantone came up with its color.
Well, I would think so, because I'm assuming the furniture is all custom made. So was the church inspired, the designer inspired of this is going to be the trendy color of the year? Or did Pantone get the lowdown that the temple was going greenery, so it wanted to hop on board and ride that train?
I don't know, but I love that color.
I love that color,
I'm
too.
I'm really crossing my fingers that they'll put it in the new Meridian Temple, but I don't know.
I'm not thinking we're going
to... I don't think the odds are good.
We're going to see greenery in the Meridian Temple.
Yeah.
So... All right, before we move on, we have to touch on a subject that we touched on last time in our podcast. We had specifically thrown down a challenge to Al to share more about his wedding and his beautiful bride.
Yes. We want to know how you met. Did you meet online?
Exactly.
Everybody meets online.
I
now,
know.
Right?
We want to know the story. And Al has yet to produce the story. So,
They're
ignoring us. So we're gonna continue to harp on this until they get it right and finally come forth with some details. So I'm gonna play this game. I'm sure you all know it. 6 degrees of separation. Okay.
Uh-huh.
You know, the game where you hook to other people and you determine how many degrees of separation. So I want to tell you how I found out Al Doan was married.
Because you knew before they said it on the podcast.
I believe I knew before they said it on the podcast. And so it was a Saturday night. I was flipping through my Instagram, catching up on my social media. And as I'm flipping through my Instagram, my friend Sue Jackson comes up. Now, my friend Sue Jackson, she lived across the street from me in Provo when I lived in Provo. And so she has an Instagram account. And so I look at this picture on her Instagram account. And lo and behold, she is at Al's wedding reception. Now, you might ask, is the picture on the Instagram account of the beautiful bride and the handsome groom? Oh, no, no, no. Is the picture on the Instagram account of the cake, of the flowers, of the decorations? Oh, no, 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 no. The picture on the Instagram is my friend Sue Jackson posing with the infamous Jenny Doan of the Missouri Star Quilt Company.
Oh, yeah.
So Sue goes to the wedding, and apparently she's nonplussed with the bride and groom or anything else about the reception, but she met Jenny Doan, and gosh darn it, she was going to brag about it on Instagram.
Oh, that's so funny. She's a little starstruck, huh?
She was a little starstruck. But
awesome.
But come to find out, Al's bride apparently used to work in her husband's office. Her husband is a doctor, and so I don't know what she did in his office, but she apparently worked in his office.
So as usual, 6 degrees of separation in the Mormon world is more like 2 degrees.
Exactly. There's not much separation in the Mormon world. So for all you listeners out there who are still wondering like us, what's the deal with Al and the bride, we now know a little bit more information.
Yes.
Okay.
So one of the things we wanted to hit on this week, well, how this came up. A couple of weeks ago, one of my former beehives, who is now grown up and a lovely college student in Utah, came to my house to spend the night on her way back to Oregon to go home for the summer. And it turns out she works at Swig. So we decided we had to talk about Swig this week. Because
Swig.
I, about a year ago, had no idea, living in Portland, what these Swig, So Delicious, this is the cookie and soda craze.
Okay.
For those of you outside of Utah that have no idea, like I had no idea.
Yes. This is very big in the Mormon Belt.
Yes,
it's big in Utah.
Places are all over Utah. It's a shop called Swig, and I think that was the first one to pop up, and now they're copycat.
Because there's also So Delicious.
Yes, so they sell specialty sodas. Like you get your soda and you mix it in like cream and different
like a dirty Diet
flavorings.
Coke.
Yes, dirty Diet Coke. That's where it came from.
The concept.
Yeah. Okay. So you mix in different flavorings and creams, and then they have an array of cookies. But the most famous cookie is the sugar cookie. So I did not even know what this was living in Portland, but I started to hear about it on Facebook from friends. So when we moved to Boise last summer, we did a trip down to Utah. It was our first time in Utah for many years. So that was first on my list. We're going to the soda places to figure out what
the buzz is all about.
What is this all about? Everybody's going crazy for these.
Is it worth the calories?
Yes. Because my original thought was, who wants a soda and a cookie? That's like sugar overload.
Yes. Unless you go the diet, then you're like half sugar overload.
But if you go the diet like I do, and then you make it a dirty diet, then you get a little bit of more sugar added.
You get more calories back added in.
So we went to two when we went to Utah last fall. We tried Swig and we tried Sodalicious.
Okay. So what was your verdict?
Oh, I was smitten. I'm smitten by them. I'm like, yeah, I like these places.
But did you like one or the other, or were you equally happy with both?
You know what? I actually liked Sodalicious a little bit better.
Okay.
Because they just had more drink variety, and I thought their sugar cookie was a little better.
Oh.
That was my take on it.
Now, Ariane and I are sugar cookie connoisseurs.
We're obsessed with sugar cookies.
We are sugar cookie snobs, you know, like a plain old, you know, sugar cookie that is flavorless, like what you buy in the local bakery, like your Albertsons or something. Nah, that's not going to cut it with us.
No. And we've been on the hunt to find the perfect sugar cookie in Boise, and there isn't one, and we do not have a Swig or Sodalicious or anything like it yet, which I find very hard to believe because Meridian, where we're getting our temple, you refer to as Provo Light.
I do. I call it Provo Light because it really is.
It really is.
It's like a mini version of Provo.
And all of the Provo things have kind of made their way up here. We have Costa Vida now, and we have a Cafe Rio now, and we have a Kneaders now. All those things that used to be Provo things.
Exactly.
Have now come to
the Boise area. Have matriculated and are centrally located to Provo Light in Meridian, Idaho.
But we're waiting for our soda shop. So I really, really would like one of those here. But anyway, back to my former beehive comes through. She spends the night with us. She brought us, I didn't even know she worked at Swig till she came and we were catching up, and this is like her college job. She brought me a cookie mix because they also make a cookie mix you can make at home.
Oh.
Which was awesome. She had no idea that I was like.
So she did not know you were a Swig fan.
She did not know I was Swig obsessed. She just happened to bring me that to say thanks for letting me spend the night.
Totally
perfect.
Totally inspired.
But I was picking her brain on the Swig. I'm like, okay, I want to know all about this because they open really early. And I noticed
How early do they open?
Like 7 a.m.
Oh.
And I noticed it on their signs in Utah when I was there. And I was thinking, who is getting their cookie and soda at 7 a.m.? So I'm asking her about this. Oh, it's a thing. She says there are regulars every morning on their way to work that get their 44-ounce Diet Coke.
So it's basically like the Starbucks of Utah.
Totally.
Okay.
So she said they do a ton of business at 7 a.m. My mind is blown.
Wow.
She also said there are customers that will come three times a day, like morning before work, lunch break during work, on the way home from work.
I hope they have a punch card.
Oh, I'm sure they do. Anyway, I can't get over it. I just think it's hilarious.
That is hilarious. And I will say, I have not tried the Sodalicious. When Ariane and I were down in Utah at the end of March for the women's broadcast, we did go to a Swig. It was very good. I loved my drink. I don't remember what I got, but I did enjoy it. And the cookie, I would give it an 8 on a scale of 1 to 10. I would give the cookie about an 8.
Cookie's pretty good.
It's pretty good. It's not the best I've ever had, but it's close.
It's pretty good. You know who has the best is Provo Bakery.
Oh.
Best sugar cookies.
Yeah. Provo Bakery does have a really killer sugar cookie.
All these people need to come up here and open a little shop by our new temple. They would kill it.
It's true. After temple, before temple. Your caffeine and sugar to keep you awake before the temple. And your caffeine and sugar.
Yes.
to get you going after the temple. To wake you up.
Totally. All right. Oh, we also thought we needed to hit on Father's Day, because last time we did this, we talked about Mother's Day.
We did. We talked about the things we love, yes, and the things we not love not so much.
We did, and talked about kind of some of our traditions, yes, that we do in church. Yes. There's always a little gift. So we just said we have to hit on Father's Day.
We do.
Because it's so funny. Like I said, my former bishop used to totally stress over what to do for the moms on Mother's Day. No stress for Father's Day. I'm getting a message here. Are guys just so much easier?
I guess so. So what did they typically do in your former ward for Father's Day?
So in our former ward, it was cinnamon rolls every year. Tradition. We would sign up, Relief Society sisters would sign up to bake cinnamon rolls, and then they'd package them up, and every dad would get to take home a cinnamon roll.
Oh, so they didn't have to eat them there. They could take them home. Again, assuming it made it past,
the children.
Made it past the children.
Very true. So yeah, it was great. Dads loved it.
Yeah. In my ward, they don't have a tradition where they do a regular thing for the dads. Well, they do a regular thing, but they don't do the same thing. They've had years where they've had the young women bake monster cookies that they've packaged out. They've given them pie. So yeah, they kind of switch it up every year. But one fun thing that they do in my ward that the primary kids they go bananas for this. So what they do is they ask the dads to come to primary. Probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 of the dads to come to primary. And they tell the dads, they say, wear a tie that you don't really care about. Okay?
Okay.
So the dads come to primary, and the dads have to fill out a sheet about their kid. What's your kid's favorite thing? What's your kid's favorite teacher? Their best friend? What do they like to watch on TV? Favorite color, etc. And so as they go through, and they have the kid and the dad up there, and the dad says, oh, her favorite color is yellow. And if her favorite color isn't yellow, she gets to take the scissors and snip a piece of his tie off.
Oh, that is awesome. I have never heard of this. Your ward does this every year?
Well, not every year, but they've done it quite frequently. And like I said, the kids just go crazy for it, because what is better than scissors at church, especially if you get to cut clothing?
Clothing! Oh, goodness. That is...
So it's a real riot.
That's pretty fun.
To say the least. So
that is pretty fun.
And then here's our other beef with Father's Day.
Yes.
So, we have a beef here. The missionaries get to call home for Mother's Day and speak to their moms. But the same is not true for Father's Day.
I know. Why have they not, equaled that out yet?
I know. Because
they're becoming very equal in other areas.
I know. I realize that Father's Day is only a month away, from Mother's Day, and they've spoken to them recently. But, come on. If we're going to let the mom speak, we should probably let the dad speak.
We should. Equal rights.
Equal rights. Because I know when my son was on a mission, I think my husband missed him more than me. I didn't get much of that Mother's Day phone call. Darren pushed me out, and he was like, no. I'm talking to him.
Oh, that's funny.
So, all right. Well, should we do some news?
Let's do some news. There were fun stories this week.
There were fun stories this week.
Lots of fun Mormon-y stories out there this week. Should I start off?
Yes. Why don't you start off? Because you love this story.
I like this story a lot. This one is super fun. This is from LDS Living, and they did a story on a family of runners who are Mormon, who are getting national attention for running in Crocs.
They're
running in their Crocs. Not like running a mile, like serious running.
Like they're like marathon running in
like
their Crocs.
Like half marathons. So
I want to know how this is possible.
So it started out with one of the kids. The family runs together a lot.
Okay.
And so one of the kids wanted to wear the Crocs when they went on a family run, and the dad was like sick of fighting the fight, and he said, fine, wear your Crocs. So it caught on, and...
Which I have to say, the more kids you have, the less fight you have.
Oh, yeah.
This had to have been like kid number 5 or 6.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And they're like, who cares? Wear what you want. Go make it. I don't care.
I'm at the point now, I'll let my girls run in flip-flops. I don't even care. So it caught on. The dad said that their running form was like better.
He noticed. Really?
So then the dad starts wearing the Crocs. And so then the whole family starts wearing the Crocs to run in. And they're getting a lot of attention because most people are thinking, how do you run in Crocs?
I know. And unfortunately, the article didn't tell us which Crocs they're running in.
I know.
Because there is a bevy of choices when it comes to Crocs.
That's true. Some are more tight, some are looser.
Yeah. And so. I have a hard time. Well, first of all, you would absolutely have to wear socks.
Yeah.
Because your feet would sweat. And then you'd be sliding all over the Crocs. So yeah. I think you for sure have to wear socks with your Crocs. And I'm sorry. Socks and Crocs is not a good look.
No, it's like socks and sandals.
Feels like socks and sandals. It's just, I think it's worse than socks and sandals.
But are Crocs ever a good look?
Well, that's
actually, I really love Crocs for my little girls.
Yes. Small children, Crocs are a great look.
Because they get really sweaty feet in the summer, and Crocs, you could just wash them, and they can get muddy and dirty, and you just wash them out.
Well, and it's easy for the kids to get on and off.
Yeah, yeah, they can get them on and off.
My son Mark, the 13-year-old, when he was a baby, he had the fattest, widest feet of any human being on this planet. I could not buy a pair of shoes to save my life that would fit that kid's feet. Except for the Crocs. Oh. So I think from the time he was, probably from the time he was about 2 until the time he was about 8, that's all that kid wore was Crocs, because that's all that would fit in his feet.
Right.
His feet would fit into.
He probably knows how to run in Crocs.
So yes, for kids, I think Crocs are great.
Yes.
Not so much for adults.
Yes. So we should mention this is a family of 10. 10 kids. So that was another thing the article said. The dad appreciates the how economical the Crocs are versus buying 10 sets of Nikes for his kids.
But he was saying in the article that, like, Crocs are $20. Last time I purchased Crocs, they were more than $20.
He must get them online.
Maybe $20 for, like, the little teeny tiny kids.
That's true for the kids.
So, yeah, maybe he has an inside source.
Maybe he has
a
Crocs outlet in his town.
I know, but still cheaper than Nike. I well agree with you there.
That's true. Anyway, good for them. And they're not only running half marathons, but they're making good time.
Good.
So, all right, what's your next story?
All right, our next story is the missionaries. The church is going to do a safety survey for the missionaries. And so what they are doing is they are surveying, I believe, every single full-time missionary and asking them questions about their safety.
Right.
You know, I don't know if they've had an increase or it just seems like there's more where they've had muggings and wrecks and other sorts
of
diseases.
Well, there's more missionaries out now.
Exactly.
So they're probably getting a lot more.
Exactly.
And this survey's anonymous, right?
Yes. I believe this survey is anonymous. But it says Mormon authorities want to know what it's like on the front line for these 62,000 emissaries. And so, you know, I am glad the church is concerned about the safety of their missionaries. I'm going to share kind of a funny story from when my son Scott was on his mission.
Oh,
so my son Scott was on his mission, and he was riding his bike, and his companion was ahead of him, and he was behind him, and this lady lost control of her vehicle, slammed into Scott. Scott goes flying over the hood of her vehicle, lands in the oncoming lane of traffic with his bike on top of him, and he can see this car barreling, or this truck barreling towards him. And he's just sitting there going, Heavenly Father, Heavenly Father, I'm going to need some help here. The truck literally stops, you know, like a half inch, you know, before it would have run into Scott.
Right.
So, you know, he ended up, of course, being taken to the hospital. He had a few, you know, some road rash and some sprains and some things like that. But we did not hear about this. Here's, you know, you would expect that, like, the mission president would call you up and say,
like,
or send you an email.
Right away.
Yeah, exactly. And say.
I think a phone call.
A phone call. Yeah. A phone call. So, you know, that when we sent him on his mission, that's kind of what we anticipated, is that anything happened, that's how we'd find out about it.
Right.
So we found out about it 3 days later when a member from the ward that he was serving called us up and said, oh, by the way, your son is fine.
Oh, my goodness.
And we went, is there a reason he shouldn't be? So that's how we found out that our son was not mortally wounded, but somewhat injured. Could have been a lot worse while he was on his mission.
Oh,
so.
Dear. Well, and how many times do you hear a missionary who comes home and later kind of confesses, oh, I never told my mom about that.
Oh,
I never told my parents how bad my living conditions were.
Oh,
or I never told them about that time that somebody pulled a gun on us.
Exactly. I
hear that a lot.
I do.
Different friends and my husband, he'll say things that, you know, oh, I'd never really told my parents about that. I didn't want them to worry. So this is good. It's an anonymous survey. It's not going to get back to their parents or the mission president. It also says they're going to survey on kind of their living conditions, too.
Oh.
It said in there to, you know, see how safe they feel in their wherever they're living.
Yes, and depending on where you go in your mission, your living conditions can vary greatly.
Oh yeah.
To say the least.
Oh yeah, for sure. Okay, what do we have next?
Oh, Kourtney Kardashian.
This is my other favorite thing of the week. This was also on LDS Living. They posted an article that Kourtney Kardashian in her Snapchat stories had a random photo of the Los Angeles Temple in her Snapchat story. And nobody could figure out why she had this photo in there.
So she had a series of what, about six photos in her Snapchat story?
A bunch of photos in her Snapchat stories. Uh-huh. One of them is the Mormon Temple in LA with like no commentary, like no.
And it's not like she's standing in front of the Mormon Temple. It's just the Mormon Temple.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know. She could have been, I mean, I'm assuming she took the picture out on Wilshire. I'm not sure. So, but people went crazy for this.
Oh.
And the comments are hysterical.
The comments are hysterical.
People are like snapping her, is that what you call it? Snapping her back? I don't know. People are commenting on her Snapchat saying,
was it her Snapchat or was it her Twitter?
I think it was Snapchat. Well, I'm not sure. Oh, maybe it was Twitter. Anyway, people are tweeting or chatting, and they're tagging her and saying, at Kourtney Kardashian, hey, girl, DM me if you have questions about the Mormon Church. I got you. And other people are saying things like, hey, do you want to go in there someday? I can tell you how.
We'll send a couple guys in suits your way.
And I just think this is hysterical. And I think we better be careful, because can't you see her mom jumping on this for like the storyline of the next season of the Kardashians?
Kourtney
starts taking missionary discussions and the family like holds an intervention because they think that she's, you know, getting involved with a cult or something. This, we better be careful, people. I'm just saying, we don't want to be the storyline.
We don't want to be, nobody wants to be the storyline on Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
I know. Okay, but I have to say, I love the disclaimer on LDS Living before they showed the picture of like her Snapchat.
Oh, read the disclaimer. This is so good.
It's hilarious. So LDS Living, in this article, they put a disclaimer. Disclaimer. LDS Living does not endorse or promote celebrities or their social pages. We do not suggest readers view Kourtney Kardashian's Snapchat, as it contains content some readers may find offensive. I don't know why that just like cracks me up. I think it's hilarious. I love LDS Living. They're the best.
Really? Kourtney Kardashian's Snapchat might be offensive? Are you kidding me?
I don't know. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, so that is the big unsolved mystery of the week. Was Kourtney just cruising around LA and went, oh, pretty building, let's take a picture?
I know.
Or did she mean to incite riot among the Mormons who now want to convert her?
I know. She had no idea what she was getting into, did she?
I don't think she had any clue.
She does now.
Okay.
All right, next one.
Oh, Johnny Depp again.
Again. We had to do this one.
We did.
Last time we talked about the fake news of Johnny Depp sighting at Disneyland.
Now, Johnny Depp was at Disneyland.
They did see him. They did not actually meet
him. But the headline of the article from the Deseret News made it sound like they met
him. So Johnny,
hence the reason we called it fake news.
Yes. So Johnny Depp is back in the news this week.
Okay.
this time with LDS Living.
Okay.
Not with Deseret News. And again, we're going to have to call it fake news.
We are going to have to call it fake news.
This was published this week, and it is a picture of him with some missionaries. Apparently, he signed a Book of Mormon for some missionaries. They got to meet him, and they gave him a Book of Mormon, and then he also like autographed one of their Book of Mormons. But if you look at the details of the story, this happened in 2012.
Yes, June 22nd of 2012 in Colorado when he was shooting parts of the Lone Ranger.
Yeah.
So this news is so old, it should be buried and dead.
We're perplexed.
We are so perplexed.
And what is the deal with Johnny Depp? Do Mormons have some kind of unusual obsession with Johnny Depp?
I'm beginning to think that Mormons have some sort of obsession with Johnny Depp and wanting to convert Johnny Depp. I really do.
He keeps showing up in these news stories.
I know. And what we're going to determine is essentially a non-news story. Yeah. He is making non-news.
I know. It's funny.
So
all right.
Anyway,
next?
So yes, we have one for LDS Living for non-news and one for Deseret News. Let's throw the gauntlet down to the Salt Lake Tribune and say, can you come up with a non-news Johnny Depp story for us, please?
Yes.
You got to keep up.
Then we could have the trifecta.
Yes, we could have the trifecta.
That would be awesome.
Okay, so the next story we have is the LDS Church returning some tithing money. So there was a gentleman who apparently used to be on CNBC as a guest expert on wealth management. His name was Curtis DeYoung. Well, he might not have been such an expert on wealth management because he kind of got convicted and sentenced to jail for taking money from individual retirement accounts for lots of money.
So much money, $25 million from over 5,400 victims.
Exactly. And many of them, unfortunately, friends and associates from church.
Right. I'm sure.
Anyway, so while he was taking and converting all of their money, he was also paying some tithing on that money.
This blows my mind. In what world are you living?
That you take people's money, and then you're going to pay your tithing on it.
But I'm a good person. I'm going to pay my tithing on it.
So apparently he had paid $239,000, give or take a few dollars here or there, in tithing money. And it was not only he that paid it, his wife paid it. I assume they do, kind of like a lot of couples in the church do, where you put both your names on the tithing slip. You may have, you know, either the husband or the wife that may have earned it, but you attribute it to both of them. And so the government, of course, wanted its money back. It considered the $239,000 to be ill-gotten gains from Mr. DeYoung, and so it wanted its money back. So essentially what it did is it essentially kind of sued the church and said, you're going to give us the money back. And unbeknownst to me until this article, Eric Hawkins, the church spokesman, says, as you can imagine, when the church is asked to return tithing funds, there's an existing careful process for doing so.
I know. This is so fascinating to me. This is just something that I never even thought of before.
I know. Who knew that there is a process
for
returning tithing funds? And so there was some debate between, you know, should the church have to return the full $239,000 or just a portion of it? Because they were saying, well, you know, some of this was attributed to his wife, and she wasn't the one who stole the money.
Right.
So she should get the benefits and the blessings of the tithing being paid on the ill-gotten gains.
Right. Well, and I think they were saying some of it may actually have been her income. I don't know if she was maybe working. Anyway, I don't know.
So they ultimately reached a conclusion that $150,000 of the tithing money was going to be returned from the church back to essentially a court receiver, who's what that means is that court receiver is essentially in charge of collecting funds to eventually repay these victims back.
Right.
So
interesting.
Kind of an interesting story.
I know. And doesn't it make you wonder, like, how much shady, tainted tithing money is there out there? I'm sure there's quite a bit.
I'm sure this is not the only shady, tainted tithing money.
I would really like a statistic on that.
You know, as good as the church is at keeping statistics on anything and everything, I'm kind of guessing they probably don't keep statistics on shady tithing money.
Probably not.
Probably not. They kind of wait for somebody to bring it to their attention.
They're probably just hoping that there's not that much.
Exactly. Okay, so our next story is, let's see, Ariane, you gotta pull this one up. I don't think we had this one pulled up. We kind of added this one at the last minute because
it was so good.
It was just too funny
so
not to.
You're all going to have to go to the TWIM website and find this one.
Actually, I think you go on the Facebook page.
Oh,
I don't think
it's on the Facebook page.
Yeah, it's not on the website. It's on the Facebook page.
Okay, look at the TWIM Facebook page.
I think it's further down.
Okay. This is a meme
that
was going around. There it is. In conjunction with the latest Donald Trump. One of the latest tweets.
One of the latest tweets. He tweeted last week this word that has been debated, first of all, debated, how is the word pronounced?
Coffee?
I've heard it pronounced on the news probably a dozen different ways. So he tweets this word.
At like super late, right?
Oh, yeah. It was like
2 a.m.
Yeah, 1 or 2 a.m. in the morning. And so then everybody is like, what in the world is he saying? You know, what is this word? And what is he trying to say? And because the word makes no sense. You know, is this a spell check gone awry?
Right. Did he fall asleep? Through the tweets?
Exactly. You know, I think Sean Spicer tried to say, oh, it's an inside joke. I'm not really buying that one. I don't think so. I think that was just to try and kind of sweep it under the rug a little bit. Anyway, so this meme that I find hysterically funny shows this woman, a very attractive, lovely, blonde-looking, young LDS woman, and she looks to be about 6 months pregnant.
Yes.
And she has a chalkboard. And on this chalkboard, she has five names listed on this chalkboard. The first name is Taylee, spelled T-A-Y-L-E-E, and that's crossed off.
Yes. Then we have McCarty. McCarty with a K.
With a
McCarty,
K.
McCarty, crossed off.
And then we have Navy?
Navy. I think it's like Navy.
Oh, I think it is like Navy.
Spelled really funny.
Yes. N-A-Y-V-I-E. And that one's crossed off. Mm-hmm.
Then we have Maylee, M-A-Y-L-E-E, also crossed off.
And then we have circled Kofifi.
Kofifi. Circled. It's the winner.
It is the winner.
It's the new Utah name.
It will be the new Utah name of 2017.
Yes.
So I expect probably babies born in the next 6 to 8 months or so. There will be a slew of Kofifis in Utah.
Kofifi. Yeah.
Kofifi.
Kofi. I don't know.
You
but
know,
we need to do a podcast on names.
We are going to have to at some point in time do a podcast on how Mormons name their children because But I don't know. I kind of like the pronunciation, assuming that it's a girl. I mean, we're looking at the names here. They seem to be all girl names. That you would pronounce it Kofifi.
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 Then you could call her Fifi for short.
You could call her Fifi for short. Maybe get her a little French maid costume. Anyway, so I laughed when I saw that meme. I thought that was the best use of Kofifi, much better than Donald Trump's use of Kofifi.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I think now we have finished our stories. We are on to our favorite things.
Oh, right. We have to do our favorite things again.
Yes, we do.
We just want to share.
Yes.
We want to make your lives better.
Yes. And we got a lot of feedback from our favorite things last time. I had several people who said to me, oh, as soon as you were talking about those apps, I was on my phone trying to find it.
Yes. Okay. So my favorite thing of the week is, this is probably old news for every other mom in the world, but you know, the Chatbooks, which I think is a Utah company.
I think Chatbooks is a Utah company.
I'm pretty sure Mormons started that. So the Chatbooks, as you know, are these little books that they can suck all of your Instagram pictures into the book and make a little like scrapbook without having to do any work.
Now how many pictures do you have to have
so
before they'll suck it up?
Every book gets 60 photos. And you can sign up for auto ship, so it automatically ships it. Anyways, so I had heard...
So you have to link your Instagram account to the chatbooks.
You link your Instagram to the chatbooks. When you hit 60 pictures, it prints it in a book and mails it to you.
Oh.
It is so awesome. Anyways,
And they're little books,
yeah,
right? They're kind of like...
They're like...
What'd you say? 5x5 maybe? Six by six,
probably. Okay. So I know people have been doing this for a long time because I've had friends rave about them, and I never jumped on board. And the reason that I didn't jump on board was because I don't post a lot to Instagram or Facebook because I feel weird putting a million kid pictures out there.
You don't want to overwhelm your friends and family with your darling children?
For people to see. Yeah, so I never had enough for a book from what I posted. And then a friend gave me really good advice. She said, well, you just start a secret Instagram account. A Sinsta. That's what my husband told me this is called. He saw on Dateline or something.
Well,
all the teenagers have Sinstas.
And like I think,
secret account.
I know that my kids have some Sinstas.
Do they really?
I'm probably about 100% sure of that. You know, despite our tracking app of last time, we haven't quite cracked the Instagram code to figure out how to get to their Sinstas.
Right. You're going to have to work on that.
We're going to have to work on that.
So anyway, now I have a Sinsta. A secret Instagram account, which is so obvious. Why didn't I think of that?
Yes.
So the only people that can see it are me and my husband. I think you,
yes.
my sisters. I have a couple of sister-in-laws because those are people that want
exactly.
to see a million pictures of my kids.
I unlike your friends probably, I love to see a million pictures of your kids. I do not mind the plethora of pictures of your kids. That does not to say that I would not That's not to say that with my other friends, I want to see all their pictures of their kids. Not that I don't think their kids are darling. But since your kids are related to me, I feel differently about them.
Yeah.
I want to see their pictures.
Yes. And if we could get Grandma and Grandpa, my in-laws, on board with the technology, they would love to see this. But we're working on that.
One step at a time.
Yes. So my favorite thing of this week that I have to share is chatbooks and the secret Instagram account to go with chatbooks so you don't drive away your friends with all your kid pictures.
Well, and then it's a really good way for you to document your family and what's going on in your family. Yeah. And then one layer of mom guilt relieved.
Right.
You could call this journaling.
You can
meet your Spencer W. Kimball requirement to journal.
So true. Write a little caption in there and call it good.
And call it good.
All right. What's your favorite thing?
Okay. So my favorite thing this week, for Isaac's graduation party, for dessert, we decided to do ice cream sundaes for dessert, hot fudge sundaes, although it wasn't just hot fudge, and we had several different toppings and that you could put on it. And so my favorite thing is a product known as Mrs. Richardson's, and you find it in the hot fudge aisle, or not in the hot fudge aisle, but you know where you find the things, toppings for ice cream.
By the ice cream.
And mm-hmm. and it's about a quart jar, is that a pint? Maybe it's a pint. I think it's a pint. I don't know. I don't know. Quarts or pints, but it's small. Let's put it that way. And it's about the size of a pickle jar, like a
yes.
small pickle jar.
Yes, that's right.
Anyway, and so they make a hot fudge sundae chocolate, and then they also make a butterscotch caramel. And the butterscotch caramel, I swear to you, it tastes like melted sugar daddy.
It's so good.
Straight melted sugar daddy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and so I love these toppings because I firmly believe, in fact, here's what's so funny. I spent more on my topping than I did on my ice cream. I bought one of those big, you know, kind of what are they, 2.5-3 gallon buckets uh-huh. of ice cream, and my two toppings together cost more than my ice cream, because I firmly believe that you should not skimp on your toppings, that you need to have the good stuff, and this is the good stuff. It is good quality ice cream topping, so I'm sharing that with everybody because we are hitting the summer season where it is hot outside and we're beginning to enjoy those cold and tasty treats to cool us down.
It is ice cream season.
So, believe you enjoyed your hot fudge sundae.
It was delicious.
Now, did you put on both the caramel and the butterscotch?
I did. I tried them both. I loved them.
I had to do both as well.
They were good. I don't think I could go back to Hershey's after that.
No. You taste the Mrs. Richardson's and Hershey's is, it's like cardboard. So anyway, that's my recommendation. Mrs. Richardson's hot fudge topping and her butterscotch caramel topping in the ice cream aisle of your local grocery store.
Very good. All right. I think that about does it.
I think that wraps it up for us. Again, this is the Sisters in Zion, Tiffany Hales
and Ariane Smith.
And we are happy to be part of the Twim Nation. Thank you.
Bye.
This week in Mormons. This week in Mormons. This week in Mormons.